A Sacred Heart University athletics employee faces numerous felony charges for attempting sexual contact and assault of a 14-year-old girl. Police arrested 39-year-old Matthew Janik after an officer posed as a young girl online and caught Janik trying to meet up for sex. In a recent report, Janik reportedly told police he has a problem being attracted to teenage girls and college-aged students. Again, this is a university official. That news comes just weeks after a very, very disturbing case of child sex abuse out of Southbury, Connecticut, regarding a 75-year-old man. Police arrested Edgar Mills after they say, among many disturbing discoveries, that Mills employed a child under the age of 10 in an obscene sexual performance and also had a detached barn on his property filled with child sex abuse materials, among many other child predator offenses he faces. These two cases in Connecticut, again, just weeks apart, beg the question, how common is the problem of child sex abuse and these dangerous predators on police radar? Joining me back on the show is former FBI agent Ken Gray. And when you hear about these cases, Ken, I don't want to be an alarmist, but I do want to be a realist. How common is this problem in Connecticut?
Hi, Melissa. Glad to be back with you again. These are very common type of offenses, and law enforcement has been working on these with task forces to try to address these issues. And as far as the traveler type case, where people are thinking that they are meeting up with kids online and then arranging to meet them in person to have sex. These cases are just absolutely plentiful. You have somebody, a police officer, posed as a minor in a chat room somewhere, and it's like throwing bait to fish, is that they just come fight over one another to try to get to person they believe to be a kid.
Yeah, the chat rooms. Talk to me a little bit about that, Ken Gray, because I noticed that, especially in the Sacred Heart University case, I noticed the same chat room, the title of it kept coming up. I can look it up and see if I can find the name of it. But I had not heard of it. Oh, Chat IB. I don't know. But apparently this is a very common website for child predators. How is this even in existence? I mean, I don't know if it matters. If you shut this down, a million more could be created, obviously. But this is disgusting, to put it simply.
Yes. Yes, it is disgusting. And you're absolutely right that these come and go, that they come up, they operate for a short period of time. There are complaints against them, and then those chat rooms get shut down, and other ones pop up to take their place.
Mm.
But this is a problem that has been in existence for some time, mm-hmm. and continues to be a problem. And law enforcement is throwing a lot of resources at this, but at the same time, there always seems to be another person out there ready to try to take advantage of minors, sexual advantage of minors. And so it really is a difficult situation.
Yeah.
The guy up in Southbury, though, is even more disturbing.
Oh, my gosh. That case literally is so my skin was crawling when I read the details.
Yes.
Of what, and according to police that I was in touch with, they said this is one of the most, if not the most disturbing case their department has faced, at least in that town, is my understanding. They've never seen something so horrific. It was disgusting, very disturbing.
Usually with child pornography cases, it's usually that the subject has child pornography on their computer. And the investigation finds that they are in possession of child pornography, they get charged with that. But in this particular case, this person was generating child pornography.
Ugh.
He had been he had his barn set up as his studio. He had thousands of photographs that he had made while engaging in sex with a minor, and then was posting that information. And the national Center for Missing and Exploited Children came across postings of this, made that information available to the police department, actually to Brookfield. I think it was Brookfield.
It was Brookfield initially, and then they turned it over to Southbury. Yep, yep.
It turned out that that he was not in Brookfield, but instead his location was Southbury. And so it was turned over to Southbury, where they obtained a search warrant, went out to his house thinking that they were going to be finding a person in possession of child pornography. And in actuality, they found that he had been generating child pornography, that he had a studio set up and had been abusing a minor, a 10-year-old minor, in generating this for some time. Thousands of photographs and videos.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And again, we have Ken Gray here, who's a former FBI agent, one of our law enforcement experts on the show. Out of the Danbury Times, this was on January 2nd, they posted an article. And again, there's a lot of disturbing detail in here. But when you look at some of the details in this, Ken, it's worth noting. It says, during the execution of a search warrant at his residence, again, this is the man in question, Mr. Mills. It says on November 27th, police learned of a detached barn style structure on the property, saw children's toys, blankets, computers, cameras, tripods, and other various items through the building's windows. They said that they secured an additional warrant where they found a total of 83 items ultimately seized from the home and detached barn. There were 25 memory cards located inside, four of which were found to have videos and images depicting child sex abuse materials of Mills engaging in sexual activity with underage girls. And again, as you mentioned, it took place in 2021, 22, and 23. Here's my question for you, Ken Gray. How in the world do kids get wrapped up in this? How does this person even get in contact with these children, or even going back to those chat rooms? How do kids even get on those chat rooms? I think it's important, certainly, that police are on top of it and finding child predators. But I think for parents, for families, to better protect their kids as well. I mean, we all have to kind of be in on this to do the best we can to protect our kids. Not pointing fingers, but like, what? How do kids even get on these chat rooms, or how would they even get mixed up with this guy?
Yeah. So in the case with Mills there in Southbury, I don't know how he came in contact with this minor. But I can tell you that in a lot of cases, it is kids gaining unsupervised access to the internet that finds themselves putting themselves at risk with adults who do not have their best interests in mind. That is that there are people who are out on the internet that are specifically on the internet looking for kids like this in order to engage them in sexual activity. And I would warn parents that are listening to your show that they should not allow minors unsupervised access to the internet, because it's a dangerous place. You would not allow your child to be out in the public talking to strangers that have a bad intent with their contact with your kid. Why allow them to do it inside your house, where these strangers are coming into your house via the internet and trying to lure your kids into sexual activity?
We just outlined for you two very disturbing sex abuse cases and sexual contact cases involving two men. One in particular, a 75-year-old who's accused of a lot of horrific offenses. Ken, we were just talking before about how to make sure your kids don't get wrapped up in all this. Going back to the Southbury case, my understanding from police and actually people in the community is that this man was also allegedly going to different gymnasiums where young girls were doing gymnastics and photographing them inappropriately as well. And so I think it's also important for adults to recognize that there's somebody here who doesn't belong here. I mean, again, kind of going back to certainly monitoring your children, but as adults, recognizing something that doesn't seem right, something that seems uncomfortable, and speaking up about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that, often these people engaging in sexual abuse of minors are looking for future victims. And so they go to things like sporting events and dance recitals and things like that without children themselves, but they are there trying to both fulfill their own sexual fantasies, but also they are looking for future victims. And so one should remain vigilant, watching for people like this. If a person is at an event like sporting event for kids, and they do not have kids themselves, or they're not grandparents of kids themselves, one should somewhat question about why they are there, why it is that they are there taking pictures of their kids. Because this may be someone who is just a sports fan, but it also might be somebody who is there scouting out potential victims.
I probably seem like a crazy person, Ken Gray, but after being a reporter for more than a decade, I am that parent that has to know everybody in the room, even if I it's not for my own want. It's certainly not to make friends. I feel bad saying that, but I'm being honest with you. It's because I want to know I can account for it. When I'm at a swim lesson, a golf lesson, an art, whatever my son is involved in, I want to know every person in the room. I want to know whose kid is yours. Why are you here? What is it? And people don't even realize, I think, for the most part, that I'm a reporter checking on this. But if there's to me, I think it's not only important that again, you keep the phones down, you stay engaged, not only in what your kid is doing, but the people in the room around you. But I also think it's important, Ken Gray, to have these conversations with your children. I mean, if I've learned anything from law enforcement experts like you, Gary McNamara being another one, it's that you have to talk to your kids about when something feels weird. I mean, I look at, I'm sorry, this Sacred Heart University case. This is somebody who even college age students should know that this is weird. This is not typical behavior of an academic officer or somebody who works in the athletic department or a professor. I mean, this needs to be a conversation with your kids as well. They have to be in the loop of understanding that this is not how people should treat you, should talk to you, should touch you, should be around you.
Absolutely. You have to remain ever vigilant, and you have to make sure that your child is aware that this is a potential threat to them, and to inform you about events like this when they happen. Again, going back to the internet case, though, is that the internet provides access to your kids without you being aware if you're not watching what they are doing on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are tools that you can use to help restrict their access. But, you know, kids are better on the internet than adults are in many cases.
It's hard. So true. It is.
It's very hard.
It is, Ken. It is. It's interesting when you say that, Ken, because I know I get a lot of slack sometimes for being too honest with my kid. He's in first grade. So, you know, people sometimes feel like I scare him too much. But I feel like sometimes instead of always just saying, do it because I say so, you know, I think being honest with your kids sometimes goes a long way. I certainly don't go too far into details. But one of the reasons, great example, my son is not allowed on YouTube unless I am watching the videos he's watching. And I shared with him, you know, I've shared with him the story out of Bridgeport. Remember the story out of Bridgeport a year or two ago where a child took their life because of one of those huggy wuggy fuzzy videos or whatever the heck they were? Do you remember that story?
I do not remember that story, but you're absolutely right that there are things like YouTube where a kid may be gaining access to material that is inappropriate for them, for their age level. And while you can be very vigilant at home with them, they're going to school, and they are going to school with kids with smartphones that
Correct.
Have access to this themselves. And so it's very hard to limit their access to this kind of material.
Yeah.
Plus, if they go to someone else's home, you don't have that same ability to monitor their activity.
Exactly.
And so by informing them about the threats, that is perhaps one of the best avenues that a parent can take.
Exactly. I just think, again, I'm not trying to be an alarmist or anything, but I know for my son, the plan of attack has been, you know, I have to be honest with him, and I'm very open about the fact that there are people with bad intentions out there, and I don't know why they exist. I don't know why they do what they do, but they're there. And as long as you have access to the internet, I got to check what you're doing, or I've got to know, you know, who you're talking to, not because I'm trying to annoy you or because I think I'm bigger and better than you, but because I don't trust people. And I think that sort of open line of communication, I'm hoping, will keep my son out of somebody's, you know, radar. Certainly, that's my hope. But, you know, I think that has to be a conversation very early on. I think kids have to understand that they are not immune to predators. I think that has to be, you know, like I said, a very common conversation, and something that also adults are not naive when they're sitting in a room with people. Read the room. Read what's going on around you and see if something seems off, and report it right away. I think that's just another thing that we can do. I'm not pointing fingers, but just ways that you could combat this issue, certainly.
I agree with you 100% that you would not allow strangers access to your kids.
Yes.
Why allow them to come into your home through the internet and have access to your kids without you being there to monitor that interaction? Why even allow them access to your kids, period?
Exactly. I'm with you. Ken Gray, former FBI agent and one of our experts here on The Morning Show. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.